Duke again. Arkansas has not trailed by this many the entire tournament. Cable, double-digit lead. That's a three-pointer.
Now, is Richardson going to call a timeout? You got to remember, as great as Arkansas is, they are a young team.
Timeout, Razorbacks.
The Arkansas Razorbacks were down by double digits a little more than 2 minutes into the second half of its championship game against the Duke Blue Devils. The players weren't scared. They were perfectly fine being down by such a deficit, even in the second half of a championship game. They had beaten Kentucky at Rupp Arena about 8 weeks earlier, in spite of being down 15 at one point in that game. They were successful at nearly every turn the entire 93-94 season, whether it was with a lead, dealing with a deficit, or down the stretch in a close game. The Arkansas Razorbacks weren't humbled much during their journey to an NCAA championship. In 1994, it was mostly one triumph after another, but one big slice of humble pie was served to Arkansas late in their journey, just 5 days before the start of the NCAA tournament. On March 12th, the Arkansas Razorbacks fell to the Kentucky Wildcats in the semifinals of the SEC tournament. They lost to the revenge-thirsty Kentucky team by the score of 90-78. Arkansas had easily won its opening round game against Georgia the day before, which had given the Hogs 13 wins in a row, their longest winning streak of the season. But in that semifinal game against Kentucky, the Razorbacks never gained their footing. Kentucky implemented a couple of different zone defenses against Arkansas, which slowed them down and prevented them from getting good looks at the basket. It was the one time during the season that Arkansas's opponent looked like the superior team defensively. Razorbacks head coach Nolan Richardson acknowledged that Kentucky looked like the better team that day, but he did not sound like an angry man after the loss, at least not in front of the media. He told reporters after the game, quote, "Sometimes being knocked down will make you hungry again. We were not hungry this time against Kentucky, like we were when we beat them at their place," end quote.
You could tell we were so upset. If you look back, three games we lost, I think we lost three of them. It could have easily been an undefeated season. But every game that they had ever lost, they would come back a little bit stronger, more intense in practice, competing against one another much, much harder. That was a unique experience.
Scotty Thurman told me that the location of the tournament, Memphis, may have been a factor in that loss to Kentucky. A few of his teammates were from Memphis, so it was possible that some or all of them were concentrating on more than just basketball that week. It was a home-away-from-home game, and that made a difference. Losses can lower confidence, but that's not what happened to the 93-94 Arkansas team. It restored the Razorbacks' commitment to play an attacking style of basketball. Corliss Williamson told me the loss to Kentucky, in hindsight, was a net benefit.
It kind of refocused us, let us reset our course, and understand what we were really fighting for, because, you know, even as 18, 19, 20-year-olds, sometimes they can get bored with success, you know, winning games, you just expect to win and just kind of go through the motions. But that really gave us an opportunity to refocus, come back and practice and really, you know, lock in and get geared towards our ultimate goal, which was trying to win a national championship.
Arkansas had spent more time with the number one ranking than any other team that season, by far. But the SEC tournament loss meant they would enter the NCAA tournament, relinquishing the overall top ranking to North Carolina. It should be noted that Carolina lost twice as many games that season as Arkansas. It's almost certain that Coach Richardson mentioned that to his players at some point. There wasn't any doubt that Arkansas would get one of the four number one seeds heading into the NCAA tournament. It was announced during the selection show that Arkansas would be the top seed in the Midwest region. As the names of the other teams in the Midwest bracket were being revealed, it was clear that the selection committee did the Hogs no favors in terms of the field. The first round game was against 16 seed North Carolina A&T. followed by a possible matchup with Georgetown, about as tough of a second-round game that any one seed could get. Also in the bracket were Tulsa, a team that took Arkansas to overtime back in November, and Michigan, which had gone to the previous two NCAA championship games. Other teams in the Midwest bracket included UMass, UCLA, Illinois, Texas, and Oklahoma State. Arkansas did get a break from the committee in one sense, according to Arkansas Democrat Gazette sports editor Wally Hall. The Hogs were set up to play in cities where their fans would inevitably show up in droves.
In those days, and they still are, that was when they started trying to put you closer to home. And so they went to Oklahoma City, huge Razorback crowd there. They went to Dallas. That's like second home to the Razorback fans. Huge crowd. I mean, it was almost like fate.
The opening round game against North Carolina A&T was held at the Myriad Convention Center in Oklahoma City. Arkansas won that first round game by the score of 94-79, but they didn't really look like world beaters in the process. All of the other number one seeds in the tournament, North Carolina, Missouri, and Purdue, had an easier time with their 16-seed opponents. But Arkansas survived and advanced to the second round, at which time they did wind up facing the Hoyas of Georgetown, which had defeated 8-seed Illinois in their first round matchup. The second round game between the Hogs and Hoyas was dynamic, so dynamic that it nearly included a benches-clearing fight.
Brown trying to feed it inside, and a foul going to be called, and oh, McDaniel gets up with a kick. Well, that was nasty on the part of Clint McDaniel.
Clint McDaniel, a junior guard with Arkansas, intercepted a pass near the low post. Robert Churchwell, a senior forward for Georgetown, who McDaniel jumped in front of to intercept the pass, tried to go for the ball, but wound up bear-hugging McDaniel. While locking him up in a bear hug, Churchwell and McDaniel went to the floor. An angry McDaniel threw an elbow. Churchwell retaliated by throwing a forearm, and then McDaniel, after he rose to his feet, kicked Churchwell. Referees and other players broke up the melee before it got out of hand, and the game was stopped. Officials conferred on the sidelines for several minutes and made a bizarre decision. Scotty Thurman had watched the situation unfold from the bench and instinctively stepped onto the court, which was against the rules. He soon realized his mistake and went back. He realized it too late. Thurman was the Arkansas player the officials decided to throw out of the game, and he had to watch the rest of it from the locker room. The Hoyas' Don Reed also had left his team's bench, and he too was ejected. McDaniel and Churchwell were allowed to remain in the game. Arkansas was without its second-best scorer, and Arkansas had only a one-point lead with less than 3.5 minutes to go in the first half. Thurman told me he would never forget the helpless feeling he had sitting in the locker room watching his team. Thurman's absence was felt, but Corliss Williamson stepped up and led the way with 21 points. The Razorbacks built up a comfortable lead in the second half and cruised to an 85-73 victory. Coming off that Kentucky loss, the Razorbacks looked a little shaky in their first two games of the tournament, but their formula was still working for them. Various forms of defensive pressure and a steady helping of Corliss Williamson. Next up was a rematch with Tulsa. The Sweet 16 game was played at Reunion Arena in Dallas. Scotty Thurman remembers that game and every game he played against Tulsa during his collegiate career.
Man, those Tulsa games were always good games because those guys could really, really shoot. They had a bunch of guys that could shoot that basketball. I mean, they were just a good all-around team. Tubby Smith, obviously Hall of Fame coach, and Coach Richard coached there, having Coach Paul Pressey and Coach Mike Anderson there. You know, I think that they always had, you know, a reason to want to beat us. And so I think they always came out and played us extremely tough for my freshman year all the way through. And so when we played them in Dallas, it was another high-scoring game. And, you know, they played well, but we were kind of riding a hot streak at that point.
Arkansas certainly was hot in that game, outscoring Tulsa by 19 and racking up a total of 103 points. It was the first time Arkansas had scored 100 or more points in a regulation game in more than a month. It was the resounding win the Hogs needed, and they entered the next round with a lot of swagger. That was fitting, because in 2 days, they were going to face a team notorious for flashing their swagger, the Michigan Wolverines. 2 years earlier, the Wolverines captured the public's attention in a big way when head coach Steve Fisher inserted 5 freshmen in the starting lineup, unheard of at the time. Chris Webber, Jalen Rose, Juwan Howard, Jimmy King, and Ray Jackson made up the Fab Five. They made it to the championship game in 1992, with those 5 freshmen in the starting lineup, losing to Duke. The following year, the Fab Five returned to the championship game, but lost to North Carolina. Prior to the 93-94 season, Chris Webber had left college for the NBA. So the Fab Five became the Fab Four, a 3 seed in the 94 tournament. Michigan was looking to make it to 3 championship games in a row. Kevin Trainer, public relations director for Arkansas Athletics, who was an undergraduate student at the time, remembers the hype during the 48 hours leading up to the regional final against the Wolverines.
You know, by the time we faced Michigan, the Elite Eight, you heard all about the Fab Five, but the Fab Four was still intact. And there was still that aura.
To add a little more spice to the game, Razorbacks junior point guard Corey Beck publicly predicted that the Razorbacks were going to do to the Fab Four what Duke and Carolina had previously done to the Fab Five, eliminate them from the tournament. But the game featuring the Fab Four versus the 40 Minutes of Hell Razorbacks had something else to add to the hype. News broke that President Bill Clinton, former governor of Arkansas, was going to be in attendance. He was joined by the First Lady and their daughter. It was the second Razorbacks game he attended since being elected president. He sat in for a home game in December of 1993 when Arkansas defeated Texas Southern. The game itself was competitive and unusual. Michigan set out to shut down Arkansas's star player, Corliss Williamson, and they did, for the most part. Williamson played the full 40 minutes of the game and scored 12 points, well below his season average, and had 6 boards. Scotty Thurman, meanwhile, led all Razorback scorers with 20 points. Arkansas won in spite of a great game by Juwan Howard, who led all scorers with 30 points. The final score was 76-68. Here is CBS's Jim Nance with the call.
Rebound Arkansas. Arkansas is going back to the Final Four. They went to the Final Four in 1990 out of Dallas. They went through Reunion Arena. And they'll do it once more.
The Fab Four scored 60 of the team's 68 points, and that was a major contributor to Arkansas outlasting the Wolverines. Arkansas's depth made them tough to beat. The Razorbacks had more scorers and more subs who could contribute with points, rebounds, and blocks. Another key component to the win was starting center Darnell Robinson, one of the freshman Twin Towers who Richardson actively recruited after committing to adding more size to the roster. Bringing in Robinson paid dividends for the Razorbacks. He scored 14 points in that Elite Eight game, and he scored 13 in the second round game against Georgetown. It was a team effort that resulted in a regional final win in front of a sitting president. The Razorbacks liked that feeling and wanted to experience it again. But first, they had to take on a talented Arizona Wildcats team in the national semifinal game in Charlotte. The 1994 Final Four was a historic one for the SEC. It was the first time 2 teams from the conference were playing in the national semifinals. The other team was not Kentucky. It was Florida, which defeated Boston College in the Elite Eight to get to the Final Four. They would face Duke. Missing from the Final Four that season was defending champion North Carolina, which had lost in the second round. The Razorbacks were focused on what was in front of them, and they knew they were in for a tough matchup with Arizona and future NBA lottery picks Damon Stoudemire and Khalid Reeves. Stoudemire and Reeves made up one of the best backcourts in the country during their time in Tucson. What made the matchup more intriguing is that the game had the potential of being a contest between 2 teams trying to shed that dreaded also-ran label. Arizona under Lute Olson had gotten to the Final Four in 1988, in the Sweet 16 in 1989 and 1991, but had lost in the first round of the tournament in 1992 and 1993, in spite of being the 2 seed both times. Arkansas, meanwhile, made the Final Four in 1990, but had not been back, and suffered some tough tournament losses along the way. It had the makings of being a frantic game. Nolan Richardson knew his team had to really prepare for Arizona and its stellar backcourt.
Arizona was a very good team. The scoring came from the guards a lot. Usually they go off on you and nothing you could do, but I think we did a tremendous job of controlling them.
The Hogs may have had their best game in the tournament against Arizona. They were in control from the start. Scotty Thurman knew early on that the frenetic pace was affecting the Wildcats.
And so coming to the game, I remember the first 2 or 3 minutes of the game, Damon Stoudemire was talking to me. He and I had a relationship when we were roommates from the Goodwill Games team the year, just that summer prior. And so he was breathing hard at the line, and one of their players was shooting free throws, and he was just like, man, I don't see how you guys can run like this all day. I looked across the lane at Corey, and I was like, Corey, did you just hear him? And he was like, what'd he say? I was like, man, they're tired.
Bob Holt, who covered the game for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, could see from the start that Arizona was going to struggle against Arkansas. He remembered Scotty Thurman telling him the story about what Stoudemire said to him during the game.
I remember talking to Scotty about that, and I give Stoudemire credit for honesty, but I don't think that's necessarily something you want to tell an opponent when you feel that way. But yeah, I think that just gave Arkansas even more of an edge. Well, hey, man, these guys are tired. Let's pick up the pace even more. But like I said, that's what that team did. They wore people out.
Alexander Wolfe, who covered the Final Four for Sports Illustrated and had a seat just a few steps from the court, could see with his own eyes that Arkansas's defense was setting the tone early.
So you've gone into the game thinking, oh, yeah, Nolan's sort of laying in wait for us with these waves of defensive pressure. And then you actually experience it. And then your sort of psychological worst fears are borne out. And I'm sure if Nolan knew that anecdote, he would have been pumping his fist.
Arkansas won the game 91-82. An all-SEC championship was not in the cards, as Florida fell to Duke 70-65. But Duke was not about to be portrayed as the party crashers of the NCAA final. Duke had hoarded so much of the national spotlight for the better part of the decade that they were sure to get a lot more positive attention. But the national media soon found out that the Arkansas team also had its share of personalities. They were fun to write about. The team was made up of character guys with character.
I remember being kind of captivated by Scotty Thurman. Thurman was chatty, he was thoughtful. In many ways, he had the profile of some of the Duke guys. You know, he played the tuba in high school. He'd been a student council president. He seemed to be this perfect glue guy. In fact, he might have been the first college player I remember hearing that phrase used in reference to the glue guy. You know, he blended really well. He could do a little bit of everything.
It was a motivated group that was on a mission. The us versus them mentality was on full display with the Razorbacks team. Richardson had them believing that they weren't getting the respect they deserved. Duke has long been polarizing, but not among the media. At least it didn't seem that way during the early to mid-90s. Wherever they played, they were the talk of the town. The Razorbacks and their fans noticed. Corliss Williamson noticed.
I mean, you get that sense from some. It's like, you know, when the media was asking those questions, like the smart team, you know, they always talk about Coach K and his accomplishments. And I mean, Coach K was a great coach, and he had a great team. But for us, we knew and felt like this was our time. You know, we belong here. We're going to show you that. There's no fluke that we're here in this championship game, and we're here for business.
The championship game is played on a Monday night. The Sunday morning before the 94 championship game, on the biggest sports network in the world, somebody said something that rubbed the Razorbacks wrong.
A guy named Mitch Albom from Detroit, he says, the smartest team will win. Well, that, you know, that ripped through the nation, and I think Nolan heard about it, and I think he used it.
The show was called The Sports Reporters, and it aired on ESPN. Albom was a regular panelist on it.
Who do you like tomorrow?
Well, I think the smarter team wins on Monday night, and I think it's Duke.
Like Wally said, Nolan Richardson heard about those comments, and he let the media hear it later that day when he addressed them. He talked about how so many in the media, who are predominantly white, speak in code whenever they talk about successful black head coaches. They're great recruiters. Their players are great athletes. They're great motivators. What they don't say is that they prepare well, or they design offenses and defenses well, or they win because they outsmart whoever they're coaching against, or that their players outsmart their opponents. I don't know Mitch Albom, who is perhaps best known to have authored Tuesdays with Maury and other top-selling books. He's one of the most successful writers to have ever come out of the sports sector, and I've read enough of him to know that he often generates strong responses from people. He's been polarizing for much of his career as a sports columnist. The most famous ones usually are. But there is no reason for me to assume that he would rely on microaggressions to make a point about why he thinks a particular team would win a game. Besides, Duke, as I've mentioned, was a darling of the basketball media back then. Be that as it may, it was a slight, perceived or not, and Nolan Richardson specialized in turning those slights into motivational rocket fuel for his players.
I think Nolan had some of these habits that have been successful. I'm not saying they weren't real. I'm not saying they didn't have origin stories that were legitimate, but he was going to pour all of those slights into a bucket. And you know, he used all these metaphors for what he was feeling and what he and his team were going to bring in response to the slights. And he was going to cook up that stew of resentment and make it work and feed it to his guys.
Wally Hall told me that something else happened inside the Razorbacks locker room prior to the game that really swung the pendulum of motivation in Arkansas's direction.
Someone was selling a t-shirt that said Duke, national champions. He bought one and took it in to Nolan. Nolan showed it to his team in the locker room before the game. He said, I told you don't get any respect.
As far as game predictions went, the media were overwhelmingly leaning toward Arkansas. According to the Democrat Gazette, 22 out of 24 media members covering the final game who were polled had Arkansas winning. Some suggested Arkansas was the hungrier team in addition to being the most talented. That was probably true. But Duke, which had won back-to-back championships in 1991 and 1992, had suffered a shocking second-round loss in 1993 against California. Not only that, but one of the highest-profile players in the country in 1994, whose star was probably even brighter than Corliss Williamson's, was senior forward and first-team All-American Grant Hill. A chance to end his collegiate career with a third national championship was something he very much wanted, and Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski wanted that for him. Arkansas coach Nolan Richardson marveled at Grant Hill's all-around game.
Grant was a tremendous player. You know, he was, there's no question, he was, I don't know if the player of the year, but he was really a phenomenal basketball player.
Grant Hill was always a matchup problem for teams, but the biggest matchup concern going into the game was who would be guarding Corliss Williamson, and could they do it well enough? Duke had a few other players besides Hill who were significant contributors. There was junior Cherokee Parks, a 6'11 big man whose 93-94 season was a breakout season, as well as senior forward Antonio Lang, who was a good scorer, but an even better perimeter defender. In the backcourt were freshman Jeff Capel and sophomore Chris Collins. Eric Meek, a 6'10 junior, also played a lot and was expected to help defend Corliss Williamson down low. Every NCAA championship game is exciting, but the excitement inside the venue, Charlotte Coliseum, engulfed everyone who was lucky enough to experience it. Kevin Trainer would never forget it.
It was a game that, frankly, that I would have loved to watch even if Arkansas wasn't involved, just because it had so many intriguing storylines and matchups to end this fairy tale season.
As expected, President Clinton was in the stands for this one. Jim Nantz calling his fourth championship game for CBS Sports, and legendary play-by-play man Billy Packer had the call.
Through the championship game assignment, we're underway for the national championship.
Check the matchups. It's Parks on Williamson, and Grant Hill not playing anybody. He's playing a one-man zone, so he's going to let Biley roam free.
Duke came out playing a sort of hybrid man-to-man defense. It was more like a reverse box and one. Instead of four guys playing zone and one defender playing man-to-man, four Blue Devils played man, while the fifth, Grant Hill, who the season prior was college basketball's Defensive Player of the Year, played a zone. That freed him to collapse down low and double-team Corliss Williamson if necessary, or come out and defend a shooter like Scottie Thurman or Dwight Stewart. But seconds into the first half, Duke almost lost Grant Hill for the game.
Beautiful block by Fox. Oh, Grant Hill fell right on his rump.
Hill went up for a rebound and did not land on his feet. He came down on his back. It was a scary sight, and Packer openly wondered whether Duke's best player would make it back into the game. But after getting checked out on the sideline, Hill returned to the floor. Corliss Williamson knew a hard fall to the hardwood wasn't going to be enough to keep Grant Hill out of the game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you start the game off and, you know, Grant hits the ground, but, you know, in a championship game like that, everything on the line, kind of the player and Grant's character, you know, he's got to get back up and be ready to go. You think about all the experience he had, starting with his freshman year playing in a national championship game.
The Razorback, who defended Hill at the start of the game, was senior forward Ken Biley, who did not get a lot of playing time during the season. Nolan Richardson's decision to start Biley was a way to reward the senior, but there was some shrewdness behind it too. Biley could defend hard, and if he picked up a couple of early fouls, it wouldn't have mattered, because it was likely that Biley was not going to be playing late in the game. The goal was to make Hill uncomfortable. Biley only played a few minutes, but Hill did not score a point while Biley was on the floor guarding him. In the final analysis, Cherokee Parks played pretty good defense on Williamson, at least at the start of the game. Williamson began going 0-for-5 from the field and committed a couple of turnovers, but there was no way he wasn't going to have an impact on the biggest game of his life. Neither team seemed to be in sync during much of the first half. But Duke took it to Arkansas early in the second half. The Blue Devils built up a 10-point lead after a 13-0 run that was capped off by a Jeff Capel three-pointer.
And here comes Duke again. Arkansas has not trailed by this many the entire tournament. Capel, double-digit lead. That's a three-pointer.
Now, is Richardson going to call a timeout? You got to remember, as great as Arkansas is, they are a young team.
Bob Holt said no one who had watched the Razorbacks team closely that season was ready to feel worried when they fell behind to Duke.
I think the feeling was, hey, we got them right where we want them, you know. Arkansas was not panicking in any way. They weren't worried about being down like a lot of teams might have been, because they felt like, you know, we're just going to keep punching these guys and deliver body blows, and pretty soon we're going to knock them out.
A jumper by Scottie Thurman with a little more than 16 minutes remaining in the game ended the Duke run, and before long, Arkansas started looking like the stronger team again. Thurman said that during the important timeout, Coach Richardson got some feedback from his players about changing their defensive set. The Razorbacks wanted to pick up the pressure.
At that time, we got down 10 points, I think, and Coach came and was like, hey, after timeout, what defense you guys want to play? And at the time, we had been kind of sitting back, 2-2-1, not really pressing. And so we were like, Coach, we want to pick them up. We got to pick them up. And he was like, hey, let's pick them up. And so we started picking them up, and they started turning over, and we were able to convert.
Wally Hall told me that in spite of Duke's run early in the second half, he felt confident early in the game and for the duration of the game that the Razorbacks were going to win.
About 10 minutes into the game, yeah, I realized it was better. There was no way Duke could overcome that defense. Duke had this really complicated offense, and Arkansas just picked it apart.
Eventually, Corliss Williamson started scoring and kept scoring. After that 0-for-5 start, he went 10-for-19 the rest of the way, scored 23 points, hauled in 8 rebounds, and dished out 3 assists. Williamson, however, did not lead his team in rebounds in that game. Neither did Dwight Stewart, the team's 6'9 center. Amazingly, it was 6'2 Corey Beck, who had 10 rebounds to go with 15 points and 4 assists. And once again, Arkansas's deep bench made a difference, more than tripling the scoring of Duke's bench. All of Duke's starters scored in double digits. Grant Hill was held to 12 points, but was still making plays all over the court. He blocked a shot late in the game that started a fast break, but Capel was unable to finish on the other end because Corliss Williamson, once again showing off his ability to run the floor, made a great block of his own. Arkansas was definitely delivering body blows, as Bob noted, but Duke kept proving it could counterpunch. With about 1 minute and 45 seconds left to go in the game, and the Razorbacks up by three, Dwight Stewart got the ball beyond the top of the key behind the three-point arc. He fired off a shot, but he had to do so hurriedly. The shot clock was down to 2 seconds when he got the ball. Stewart's shot hit the back of the rim and backboard as the buzzer sounded. Grant Hill got the rebound, and Duke regained possession.
That rebound by Hill gives him a career high. Now he goes for the tie!
That made the score 70-70. Beck walked it up the floor, and when he got close to the Arkansas bench, Richardson called timeout with a minute 15 to go. After the timeout, Beck had the ball near the top of the key and clearly wanted to get the ball to Williamson, who was guarded closely by Parks. Hill was also in the vicinity, ready to close in as soon as Williamson got the pass. Beck instead passed the ball to junior guard Clint McDaniel, who took it out near half court so that the Razorbacks could reset the half-court offense. McDaniel passed the ball back to Beck, who drove left toward the basket, but he was surrounded, unable to go up for a clear shot, and unable to dish it to Williamson.
Under 10 on the shot clock. Stewart's open.
Just as Billy Packer saw that Dwight Stewart was open, Beck saw him. He threw a hard pass to a wide-open Stewart behind the three-point arc. Stewart was standing almost at the same spot as the previous Arkansas possession, the one in which he clanked a three-point shot attempt. Stewart's shots did not usually do that. He had touch and range on his shot, and he wasn't afraid to show it. The pass to Stewart in that situation often meant he would shoot it. It seemed likely that the junior center would do so again when he got the ball, because the shot clock was once again winding down. But then came one of the luckiest accidents in NCAA tournament history. Stewart did not catch the ball cleanly when Beck passed it to him. The pass was a little off target, and Stewart tried to catch it with one hand, but he bobbled it, and the Duke defenders noticed. Chris Collins ran out to guard Stewart. Antonio Lang, who was guarding Scotty Thurman, looked at Stewart corralling the ball. That split-second distraction meant that he lost track of his man. Thurman had popped out to the wing. Here are Nance and Packer with the call, just as the ball got to Stewart.
One on the shot clock. Thurman beat it. Oh! He got it! Three-pointer! Huge arch on that. He had to do it to get it over Lang's hands.
Just as the announcer said, Stewart passed it to Thurman, who knew exactly what to do. But he also had to contend with Lang, leaping at him. Lang may have lost track of Thurman for a moment, but he still was an elite defender, with length, and could close quickly. Scotty Thurman remembers how it all developed from the time Corey Beck drove toward the baseline looking for a way to get the ball to Williamson.
I didn't think I would receive the ball. You know, I saw Corey Beck going to the left side of the floor right in front of our bench trying to enter the ball into Corliss, and Corliss had, I think, Eric Meek was behind him, Cherokee Parks was in front of him, Grant Hill was behind those guys, and so it's kind of like, you know, he couldn't throw it in there.
Thurman saw the ball go to Dwight Stewart. He said he sprinted out past the three-point line, mainly as a precaution.
When he throws it out top, I'm on the opposite side block because I'm thinking the shot's about to go up. And so as I'm thinking the shot's about to go up, I peep up at the clock to see how much time was on it. And I'm thinking, well, I better get back out here on the wing in case he needs me. And so I pop out. Well, that's the moment that Antonio Lang lost sight of me. So as he loses sight, Dwight just throws it to me.
The television audience was treated with several replays of Thurman's go-ahead shot. During a timeout, Billy Packer emphasized how much Thurman had to adjust the shot just so that it would have a chance to go in.
Watch the arch he puts on this to get it over Lang, way above his normal arch, and drains it.
Alexander Wolf of Sports Illustrated had the perfect seat.
I remember it like it was yesterday for the simple reason that I was still down on the court in a press seat, right, courtside, and would you believe I was sitting right behind him when he let the shot go? So Antonio Lang is coming right at me, and this is from the right wing, and I had a full appreciation for how close Antonio Lang came to blocking that shot.
Scotty Thurman did not get lucky with that shot. The man knew how to shoot over taller defenders. Thurman learned from his high school coach that he needed to get accustomed to shooting over big men. His coach would literally grab a broom and hold it over his head while Thurman did shooting drills. He'd come after Thurman with a broom over his head and force Thurman to shoot over it. Thurman believes to this day that those early practices with his high school coach made a big difference.
I thought it was crazy when my coach had me shooting over the broom. I really did. I didn't think that made much sense, but I did it because he asked me to. And so who would have ever thought that it would pay off in a moment like that?
As for the rest of the game, Duke missed a three-point attempt during the next trip down the floor and was forced to foul Arkansas. Duke only scored one field goal the rest of the way and could not overcome the Razorbacks, who converted enough free throws down the stretch to hold off the Blue Devils. The final score was Arkansas 76, Duke 72. Here is Jim Nance with the call.
Arkansas is in hog heaven. They've won their first ever national championship.
It was over. The Arkansas Razorbacks were no longer relegated to the side of the stage. They no longer had to share the stage. They had the stage to themselves. They were champions. No one relished that feeling more than Corliss Williamson.
It was an amazing feeling, you know, especially for me being a kid from Arkansas, from Russellville, Arkansas, and, you know, having the opportunity to win a championship. You remember as a kid being out there, having the countdown, you know, 3, 2, 1, you're shooting shot. And it goes in, you win the championship, but you really don't understand how it feels until it happens. I was overcome with emotion. I remember jumping up and down, tears out of my eyes. Just, you know, we did it. We finally did it. And, you know, and Coach Richardson was the one that encouraged us, that pushed us, and got us to the promised land.
The post-game celebration following this game was unusual, to say the least. The president was in the arena, and he made sure to address the teams afterward. That made things tricky for Kevin Trainer.
I was tasked with getting Rose Richardson, Coach Richardson's wife, back to the locker room after the game. And as you can imagine, the chaotic scene of a national championship, a trophy presentation, we head back toward the locker room, and I've got Coach Richardson's wife, and we get to the hallway to the locker room, and there's a Secret Service agent standing in the door of the hallway, and he says, "You can't go through here. The president's in the locker room." And I said, "But I have to get back there. I've got Coach Richardson's wife right here. She needs to get back to the locker room." And he looked at me and then allowed her to go. I never made it.
Nolan Richardson and the players addressed the media after the game. There were no more expressions of feeling underrated or overlooked or disrespected. They could just bask in the joy of their championship. The media appreciated what they were seeing.
There was a feeling that this was a deserved title, and it was an accolade that Nolan Richardson deserved, particularly, you know, given the road he had traveled. And not just at Arkansas, but, you know, if you go all the way back to the El Paso of his youth, you know, and the various mentors that he had had. And that was a feeling. I remember feeling that and also just sensing that from the press corps afterward.
Razorbacks fan David Alphen attended the game and had ridden the full roller coaster ride of ups and downs since before the days of Eddie Sutton. Perhaps unexpectedly, he had confused emotions as he was filing out of the arena that night.
When it was all over with, I just sat down and I thought, my goodness, what? That's it. We've won the national championship. And it was almost like an empty feeling because my stomach had started to bother me and I was having to take Tagamet by prescription back then. Now you just get it over the counter. But I just thought, what an empty feeling. I remember reading in a history book one time when Alexander the Great conquered the world and he sat down and cried because there were no more worlds to conquer. That's I can relate to that then. I said, I don't want it to end. I want my stomach to be nerve-wracked again.
David Alphen still continues to show his full devotion to his Arkansas teams. And during that offseason, he made sure to express his satisfaction to those who had doubted Richardson during those early years.
Nolan, you know, just run, shoot, and holler, and all that kind of stuff. They caught it from me all year long, all year. And I reveled in it, too. You know, just in their face the whole time. Negative people need that.
The following season was a challenging one, but it was still a remarkable season. The Razorbacks returned to the Final Four, defeated North Carolina to get to the championship game, only to fall to the UCLA Bruins in that final game. According to Wally Hall, UCLA may have been the only team to crack the code on how to stop Corliss Williamson, at least for a single elimination game.
UCLA would triple team and then sag a fourth guy down on Corliss. And he was having trouble getting the ball out and down low because all his passing lanes were blocked. So it was a gamble by UCLA, but it paid off. I still think Arkansas was the better team.
The Razorbacks fell just short of a repeat championship. So have the vast majority of teams that have attempted to repeat since the end of the UCLA empire of the 60s and 70s. Duke and Florida are the only teams to have done it. This is a cliche, but it's true. Defending championship teams always get the opponent's best shot. That's why repeat championships are so hard.
You know, if you look at the 1994 into the 95, that's what I tell our kids all the time. In 95, you were the defending champion. So every game you played, the team was playing a championship game against you. Every game. So it wasn't like you slipped up on anybody. They knew what you had because most of you all came back. You had to fight off guys who normally play a regular game. The Razorbacks coming to town. I said the gyms were more sold out. Why they come to see you get beat?
Corliss Williamson, who went on to win an NBA title with the Detroit Pistons during his career, believes that 93-94 team rode the biggest wave and could have beaten any college team ever assembled in any era.
I'll put us up against anyone. That team, the way we were connecting on and off the court, I'd put us up against any other team and think we would come out on top. Some people may say that's crazy. Think about some of the great teams that have won championships, but no, I'm rolling with the 94 Razorbacks all day long.
One of his favorite things about winning that championship was winning it for his coach.
Coach showed tough love. It reminded me a lot of my father. And one of the reasons why I chose to go continue to grow as a young adult, not just a basketball player, but to continue to grow as a man at the University of Arkansas under him. What you saw from our team was a reflection of Coach, a team that was tough, who's going to play hard, who's going to do things the right way, and is never going to give up and stand up for what we believe in. So teams take on the personality of the coach, and that's what we did. You know, playing for Coach Richardson, you had to have tough skin. You had to have a little bit of toughness to you to make it through. If you were able to make it through, then you were better for it.
It was well documented that Richardson's exit from Arkansas was not the one anyone had hoped for. The working relationship he had with Broyles never got smoothed over, even after winning a championship and coming close to winning a second. The tumult led to so much built-up tension that Richardson boiled over during an infamous press conference in 2002, during which he said, quote, "If they go ahead and pay me my money, they can take this job tomorrow." The bottom line is that he felt underappreciated, and he felt race played a part in that. Broyles did fire Richardson and paid him a $3 million buyout. Coaches who are larger than life and whose legacies permanently hang over the programs they built and led for decades sometimes wind up embroiled in ugly divorces. It's happened to the likes of Bob Knight, Lute Olson, and Jim Valvano. This one, however, felt the most personal. After the split, Richardson filed a lawsuit in federal court alleging racial bias. 2 years later, in 2004, the lawsuit was thrown out by the judge. After the anger and disappointment washed away, Frank Broyles spoke kindly of Nolan Richardson, once writing in a letter, quote, "My family and I have the utmost respect for Nolan Richardson and his wife, Rose. I have continued to be proud of his accomplishments and believe his impact on the game of basketball will stand the test of time. The entire state is happy that he chose Northwest Arkansas to be his home." Following the news of Broyles' death in 2017, Nolan Richardson expressed his condolences and called his former boss a jewel of a man. Nolan Richardson spoke to me about his feelings today about Frank Broyles.
The thing that is so important to me is that Frank Burroughs was the guy that opened the door and hired this black coach to come lead the University of Arkansas. I admired that, and I respect that. He and I didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things, and things got a little worse because there was time that I worked that didn't even have a signed contract. I didn't have the agents and things negotiating for me when I took the job at the university. And when you go in there and things don't go right, you start changing things in the middle of the drift. I have a problem with that. It wasn't because he didn't like me, because in order for him to do what he did, he had to like what I do. And I think I'm good at what I do. And so I have to give Frank all the credit in the world of opening doors for African-American coaches, because after that, the door opened.
Today, the arena that was built specially for Nolan's 40 Minutes of Hell is still named after Bud Walton. But the court is named after the man who had immeasurable impact, not only in Arkansas, but college basketball. Wally Hall, Bob Holt, Alexander Wolf, and others who cover the 93-94 team remember so many details of that season. The players, the game, the press conferences. The one thing they'll never forget is how much the players were an extension of their tough-minded, charismatic, and highly successful head coach.
He brought great joy to a lot of people, and he pulled together, 12 to 15 guys year after year to play some really memorable basketball. And, he's a giant, and it'll be impossible to think of that 94 title team without thinking of those ridiculous collars on his shirts and, the passion on the sideline. The team reflected the coach in a way that I think few teams ever have in college basketball.
The larger-than-life Nolan Richardson, who during his coaching years stood 6'3" and weighed about 250 pounds, used to talk a big game, and the reporters loved it.
He used to have a saying, Tony, and I don't think he could have said anything more honest and truthful. He said, if you see me in a fight with a bear, you better help that bear.
Nolan Richardson, who was inducted in the Naismith Hall of Fame, is slimmed down these days. His hair and beard are gray. He lives with his wife, Rose, on their 155-acre Northwest Arkansas ranch. He has easily transitioned into elder statesman status and has taken on a more reflective tone whenever he takes calls from the media. He was very much that way with me.
To me, the greatest fans in all of America is the Razorback fans. I was fortunate and very proud. That's what Yvonne saw. He said, you got built in, you got fans, they travel with the team, they do all kinds of things. You can win here, Dad. Yep. I said, yep, I can. You won everywhere else. And she was right.
Thank you for listening. The clips I used for this series came from CBS Sports, Razorbacks Radio, and the SEC Network. I personally want to say thank you to Coach Nolan Richardson and all of my guests for sharing so many of their special memories of that special season.
Hog Wild, the Razorbacks Championship Season, is a podcast by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. The show is written and hosted by Tony Holt and produced by Kyle McDaniel.